Not yet.
Okay.
Doesn't mean it won't.
Okay.
Okay, so now Nancy's gonna talk about the California preschool instructional model.
But before I talk about the CPIN, just to respond to your question about the desired results developmental profile system, the 2010 version, there is currently work being done at the State Department of Education among all the different partners between Special Ed and Child Development Division. And they are in the process of aligning the DRDP access, which is a tool for children with special needs, with the 2010, so that there will be one instrument, and that's projected to be released in the next several years, and a lot of work is going into the development of this combined tool. So that will be a wonderful resource once it's available. Okay, so I'm here to share with you highlights of the California Preschool Instructional Network. We are the statewide system for professional development for preschool teachers and administrators, and we were initiated, the program was initiated in 2003. And prior to the implementation of the California Preschool Instructional Network, there was no statewide system for professional development for preschool teachers and administrators. There was a system in place for infant toddler care, the Program for Infant Toddler Care, PITC, but there was not at that point a system, and the State Department recognized that, and that's how CPIN came to be. It's a very unique model in that we partner with multiple agencies and departments within the Division of Education. So part of our funding comes through the Child Development Division at the California Department of Education, and that's through the Quality Funds, through the CCDBG Block Grant. But we also receive funding from the Special Education Division to support children with special needs within our inclusive model, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. The way in which we implement and deliver professional development, it is through our CCESA structure, and CCESA stands for the California County Superintendents Educational Services Association. And that is the infrastructure system that's in place here in California that organizes the 58 county offices of education here in California. And CCESA is broken up into 11 regions, and I'll talk a little bit more about how we deliver it through the regional model. And then another important partner in this collaborative effort in terms of providing professional development is West Ed. West Ed is an agency that works with all of our CPIN leads. They develop all of our training modules. They conduct the training so that all of our CPIN leads have consistent materials and resources for professional development. And they also maintain our CPIN website. If you haven't had a chance to take a look at the website, you'll find a plethora of resources, not only the professional development offerings that we offer, but we also offer online courses for college unit or either academic or continuing education units, and that's available. We have video clips of researchers who have presented at previous CPIN events, and Dr. Judith Chickendance is featured on our website focusing on language and literacy. We also have Dr. Ross Thompson focusing on social emotional development. So the CPIN website includes a lot of resources, and if you haven't had a chance to take a look, I would encourage you to do so. This is the map of California, and the color coding system here identifies how the county offices of education, the 58 county offices of education, are organized into the 11 regions. There's much diversity in terms of how the regions are organized. If you look at Region 3, which is the purple and very center, we have 10 counties within Region 3, and comparing that to the blue towards the bottom of the screen, that's Los Angeles, one county, but of course you know there are, that's our largest county and includes the largest population of children that we serve. Within each of the 11 regions, we have one county office of education that serves as the lead agency to implement and to coordinate all of the professional development activities. So CPIN is organized through this regional structure, and we work very closely within this regional model with many of our statewide partners, including the Mentor Project, our PICT partners, and many other projects. And we also work very hard to coordinate all of our efforts with locally funded programs at the local level as well. So our CPIN leads do incredible work in terms of making those connections so that we're coordinating all of our efforts. In terms of what the implementation of CPIN looks like at the local level, we have in each region one full-time who we refer to as the full-time ECE lead, and this would be Debbie is one example. And they are responsible for coordinating with all of the counties within their region so that we are expanding our outreach to all of the regions or to all of the counties throughout the region. They work closely with county offices of education within their regions and again, other local partners. We also have other experts who serve on that team, and Eloisa Mendoza is one of our English learner experts. Within each region, we have who we refer to as our English learner leads who have extensive expertise around meeting the needs of our English learners, and they are just such an important part of our team. And then finally, we have our special education leads who have expertise around meeting the needs of children with disabilities. And again, those positions are those positions that are funded through a special education division. What we've also embarked upon in the last 3 or 4 years is that as CPIN's needs have increased and the demands have increased in terms of professional development and our on-site support, many of our regions have also partnered with who we refer to as CPIN consultants and partners so that we are identifying different partners in various counties, particularly in the rural communities and in Southern California where there's a great diverse need. We also have beyond that core team of three, we also have expanded to many CPIN partners throughout the state. The focus of our work is to provide, let me go back one slide here. The second bullet here, when CPIN was initially developed, the focus of our professional work was to provide professional development, and at that time, all of these documents that Debbie shared with you were being released to the Department of Education. And so again, CPIN was the vehicle to get this information out to our preschool teachers and administrators. And that became the focus of our work. And for the first 6 years of CPIN's existence, professional development was our primary role out in the community. Since 2009, we have shifted our work, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in some of the subsequent slides here, but we have shifted our work where we are now balancing our professional development and providing on-site technical assistance and professional development to programs that are referred for CPIN services, and I'll talk about how we have refined that referral process, but this has been really important work in terms of how we are meeting the individual needs of each program. Our CPIN leads, when a program is identified for this on-site support, they meet with the administrators, they look at their self-assessment plans, and really cater the support and the professional development to meet the individual needs of that program. We also, because of our focus on meeting the needs of English learners and our children with special needs, the emphasis of all of our work, whether it's the professional development or on-site support, we really focus on this inclusive model and emphasize the importance of that through all of our work. And again, because we are a state-funded entity, the primary focus of the services are targeted for state-funded preschool migrant ed programs, but because many agencies either braid funding between state-funded programs and Head Start or have co-located programs within sites, we do reach out to the majority of our public subsidized programs, subsidized preschool programs throughout the state. This is just a quick slide to share with you, just a quick overview of our professional development impact. In 2010-11, we had almost 16,000 participants attending CPIN professional development sessions throughout the state. And the way in which these are organized, the majority, almost 12,000 or 11,186, attended regional professional development sessions, which are sessions that are open to any teacher, administrator, teacher leader throughout the region. So those are open and advertised for anybody to attend. But then again, as we've moved to our on-site support, we also provide that individualized on-site professional development. And again, we have about 3,000 who have attended our on-site professional development sessions. And those numbers tend to be small because for our on-site, we really focus on providing that intensive support. And so it is for a smaller cadre of teaching staff who we serve through our on-site work. And then the blue highlights attendance, about 1,600 who have attended what we refer to as our network meetings. And our CPIN network meetings are designed and focused around providing professional development for administrators and other teacher leaders so that they can take this information back to their programs and train their staffs as well. Yes? That is the primary focus of our funding. But although, again, because there are co-located programs, when we provide on-site support, depending on the request of the administrators, they may request professional development for all the staffs within an agency and then target that on-site for specific teachers. So Head Start teachers could be part of that on-site.
Because we have five centers on campus, and we need to see our campus. 3 out of 5 are state funded, while the other 2 are not. So let's just say if we do request the on-site professional development, can the other 2, like staff, be able to participate?
They can definitely participate in the on-site professional development, and we encourage that because we want to maximize our outreach when we are working out in these communities and particularly with our on-site. Yes?
What about for standalone private nonprofit preschool programs? Like they're not part of, you know, of a Head Start or of a state-funded preschool. They're just a standalone private nonprofit.
If it's not state-funded through CPIN because of our focus, but we'll talk about the Race to the Top, because if you are located in a community where your county is receiving Race to the Top funds, that is a very inclusive model that includes private sector, family child care, so we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So this next slide here, just want to expand a little bit about how we moved into providing on-site support and technical assistance. And again, this began in 2009. And this was, again, another collaborative effort, and a lot of work went into developing an on-site model for CPIN through our partnership with the California Department of Education Child Development Division, the Field Service Office. The Field Service Consultants in the Field Service Office, these are the consultants who go out and they provide support and monitor state-funded programs. And so they are reviewing all the program self-assessments, they are going out conducting monitoring visits, and have ongoing communication with these programs. So our field service consultants have intimate knowledge of our programs and have extensive knowledge about programs that could really benefit from our CPIN on-site support. So they have been key partners in helping us to develop our on-site model. The other key partner is our SEEDS project, which is the Supporting Early Education Delivery Systems, and this is a project funded through the Special Education Division of the California Department of Education. And SEEDS is another model that provides on-site technical assistance, but their focus is to support programs to develop inclusive models and to develop full inclusion programs. So again, these are providers, are the consultants from SEEDS, have intimate knowledge about these programs throughout the state because both the field service consultants and SEEDS, they serve programs up and down the state, just as CPIN does. And so this collaboration among all three of our entities has been just critical in terms of identifying the programs that need CPIN services most. So in terms of what this looks like, all of our intensive on-site support is voluntary. We do receive referrals from our field service consultants. We also receive self-referrals from programs. And because our CPIN leads work so closely with preschool programs in their communities, they have extensive knowledge as well regarding programs that could benefit from this on-site support. We don't charge a fee for any of our services. And again, the services in terms of this intensive on-site support is individualized, and we really respond to and cater to the needs and the requests of both the administrators as well as the teachers. As all of you know, in providing on-site support and coaching, building relationships has been the key to the success of this model. And our CPIN leads have worked extensively to begin those conversations and not move too quickly if a program is not ready. And so we really are very flexible in our approach and really focus on that relationship aspect. We, as part of our work, recognize that CPIN can't do this work alone. There are so many needs out there, and we have so many statewide systems and programs in place. And so we coordinate many of our efforts with programs like the California Mentor Program, which you'll hear about. We work very closely with the PITC program. There is also the CIBC, and that stands for the California Behavioral Inclusion Network. So there are many other state-funded on-site support services that we make cross referrals to, so that especially as we're exiting programs, we want to ensure that we're supporting that sustainability, and so working with our partners to provide support once CPIN leaves and exits is critical. Very quickly, just wanted to let you know that I'm going to describe all of our CBB resources briefly, but do know that they can either be purchased through CDE Press, and for those of you from Hawaii and other parts of the country, you can download these. So these are the websites where you can find these. They are many pages, so just a warning, but they are free to download, and they're all located on the CBE website. And it's my understanding, Ellen, I believe we've placed our PowerPoint, or we are in the process of placing our PowerPoint through this conference so that you can access them. But if for some reason you want to access them sooner, just go to the California Department of Education, and in the search feature, type in those titles, and it will pop up, and you'll be able to access the full document. So in terms of the various resources, because the professional development and the on-site support that we conduct through the California Preschool Instructional Network is focused on all of these CPE resources and publications that you've heard about, our goal is to support teachers to take the information, the research that's included in the foundations and the framework, and put that into practice in the classroom setting. And so the first set here is volume one, and this was released back in 2008. And one thing I do want to share with you, and maybe some of you may have been involved in this process, I think what's very unique about the development of these preschool learning foundations is that we, number one, had nationally recognized researchers contributing to the writing of the foundations as well as the curriculum framework. And so we had people like Dr. Judith Chicken Dance contributing to the Preschool Curriculum Framework Volume 1 in the domain area of language and literacy. We had Dr. Ross Thompson and Janet Thompson from UC Davis writing the foundations for social emotional development. We had Dr. Clements, Douglas Clements, who at that time was with Buffalo State University. As well as Aki Murata from UC Berkeley, who wrote the math foundations. And then for the language and literacy foundations, we had Chris Lonigan, as well as Ann Cunningham. So there were nationally recognized researchers who wrote the foundations initially. But in California, the Department of Education recognized that we needed to gather input from practitioners in the field, from teachers, administrators. So through CPIN, we conducted multiple sessions to gather input and to gather examples from practitioners. And you'll see evidence of all the examples for each of the foundations in all of these documents. And this extensive input process occurred for each volume. There's volume one, volume two, and volume three. And both the curriculum framework and foundations, these documents truly reflect feedback from the field, and it combines that research with practitioners' knowledge and expertise. So these were, it was a very extensive process, but in the end we came up, these are just extremely valuable documents that have been very well received because the practitioner voice is reflected in these documents. Debbie shared with you that the curriculum framework is the how, and it focuses on developmentally appropriate practices and provides information about how to set up environments, how lots of examples about interactions and strategies that promote development in these various domain areas, and also talks about classroom routines. I'll just very quickly share with you, they cover all the domain areas, and so volume one covers social emotional development, language and literacy, mathematics, English language development. Our volume two, which was just released, covers visual and performing arts, physical development, and health. And volume three was just released. In fact, we have a copy of the curriculum framework, which is now going to be available very soon. And volume three covers history, social science, and science. So I'm going to move very quickly through several of our other documents. The Preschool English Learner Guide, again, has probably been one of the most requested professional development that we offer because we focus on important strategies in terms of how we support English learners. It's a very extensive document that talks about how children acquire a second language. It goes into the set stages of language acquisition and how children, the strategies that they are using to learn a second language. We also focus on preschool English learners who have special needs as well as literacy strategies to support English learners. And then Inclusion Works is our final document, and this is a valuable document that's designed for not only family child care providers, but center-based programs. And this document really focuses on how to support inclusive environments. It includes modifications, adaptations, and resources. And the last section provides just extensive examples of how to promote inclusive settings. The next two documents I won't go into because these are professional development opportunities that are offered through the PITC, the Program for Infant Toddler Care, and they focus on infant toddler foundations. There's a curriculum framework companion document that goes along with that, as well as the infant toddler program guidelines. Okay, so I am now going to turn it over to Debbie, who's going to talk about the most important part, and that's the real word.
Okay, so as Nancy said, we wear two hats as CPIN leads. One hat is we do professional development for early childhood administrators and teachers, and we do big network meetings in some of our bigger areas, small ones repeated several times in some of our more rural areas. But all of us across the state are conducting these big network opportunities so that our administrators and teacher leaders can come together a couple times a year and really look at how to take back camera-ready kinds of information to their staffs, because we can't possibly get out to every teacher in every school in the whole state. So we really count on our ambassadors to do that with us. We also run around our own regions doing teacher training, lots of Saturdays and evenings when teachers can come. And then we do some customized training for programs as well. And we even have a fee-for-service model now where if a program who is not state-funded or who has a special grant or really wants our services, we do have a cadre of trained CPIN trainers that are available to help us get out there and provide the fee-for-service training. So if you're interested in that, you should talk with your CPIN leads. But what I really want to focus on is to show you a couple of pictures here. This is a group, actually this is at one of our network meetings in the Bay Area, this was in Berkeley, where we rolled out the health domain. And you can see that little My Plate in the middle of the table where they had to think about the different food groups. And we try to model at the meetings what folks should be taking back and doing in the classroom. And we ask that everybody that comes to the network meetings promises that they'll take something back either to the classroom directly or to a colleague. They have to share what they learn at those meetings. And I think we've been pretty successful with that at spreading the word. And so these are just some quotes that folks made at this particular training, that they, you know, really about the promoting the child's home language, which is very important piece of research that we really do promote, that we add on to the child's home language. And that's part of every training that we do. And we talked a lot about healthy practices and behaviors at this particular training. And then this one was in another region where they were working on math. And again, we talked about English learners. This just happened to be this particular slide that we pulled. But thinking about strategies for all children, of course, but then also to think back on, okay, well, what are we going to do if a child is still acquiring English? How can they have access to the same information and still learn what they need to learn so by the time they get to kindergarten, they have all those skills under their belt? And then this one was a preschool English Learner Guide training, I believe in Los Angeles, quite a large group there. And they talked about, you know, what was the impact on their work from this, excuse me, from this particular training. So this is the kind of thing that we do a lot of it. And for years, this was the only hat we wore. Well, now we have another hat that, personally, I have to say that being in the classroom and doing the on-site support and technical assistance to those preschool programs that feed into our neediest elementary schools has been some of the most rewarding work of my entire almost 30-year career. Because I'm there on the floor with Eloisa, my colleague here, who's an expert in English learner work, and our other colleague, Lisa Shahanan, who's our special education lead. We go into the classroom, and we're right there with the teacher. We can demonstrate, we can observe the teacher, we give the teacher feedback, we meet with the teacher on a regular basis. We do training, on-site training, so that the whole staff gets trained, even if we only work directly with a couple of folks, as Nancy was talking about earlier. And plus, it just keeps us honest. You know, we're doing training, and we can say, and when I was in the classroom, I saw, so I'm going to tell you a little story here. We did a huge series this year in several places on math, and it was a three-part series. We did number sense, geometry, and measurement, and we did a big training in Solano County, just north of the bay here, and we had about 65 folks, I think, on a Saturday. 3 days later, we enter the classroom of a teacher who had been at the training, who was also the teacher we were providing some on-site support to. And the children were already engaging in all of the math games that the teachers had made in the training. So we were pretty amazed that it took just a 3-day turnaround, which we don't always see, right? But it was, wow, we got to see what's going on here. So I went and sat down at the math center where there were several children playing the games. There's one game we call Peace Card Game, and it's like war where they have to match the pattern on the domino or the die. And the whole concept is called subitizing. And if you picture, if I showed you three dots on the screen, and then I turned off the projector, and I said to you, how many dots did you see? Okay. Everybody would say three. And then I would say, well, how do you know? Well, I counted. One, two, three. Did you really? Did you count? It was only up there for a split second. I don't know if you counted. No, you did, because you have memorized the pattern on the die, or the pattern on the domino. So you know whenever you see a group of three, you know it's three. Whenever you see two together, you don't count them, right? You just know they're two. Well, this is a very important skill. It's called subitizing, and it really comes before counting. Children as young as, what did they say, 6 months or something, can recognize two dots together, and then when you add another dot, they notice. When you take a dot away, they notice. It's very important that they learn those patterns first, and then there's a whole trajectory for that, and then it leads to the developmental sequence of counting. So I sat down at the table with these children that were playing the games, and one of the games is this, what we call the dinosaur game, and you're going to get one of these today.
Yay.
We brought them for you. And I was sitting with little Kalia. And I was saying to Kalia, how do you know, how many do you see here? And she would say one, or she would say two, and we did it up to three. Okay, then we got into the higher numbers, because you always start with one, two, and three, and make sure they got that first. And then you move into four, five, and then you can even go up to six. So we were looking at the five. Now, you know, you can't see it here, but you know that a five is two dots at the top, two dots at the bottom, one dot in the middle, right? We all know that. Playing cards, whatever, right? So I said, Kalia, how many do you have here? She said, five. So I said, how do you know there's five? And I thought she would say she counted, or I thought maybe we would count together, which is what we often do. And she put her hand on her hip and she goes, can't you see the X? Right? So she had created her own mnemonic, right? Her own memory device. So she could remember that that pattern was always going to be five because it was always the X. And I was just flabbergasted by that. I just, you know, am continually amazed by these children. So that's a great story to be able to tell. If we weren't in the classroom, we couldn't even tell a story like that. Mm-hmm. And it's true. So what I wanted to do for you here today is have you, we're going to pass out to you the materials to quickly make this game, and then you get to take it with you. And it's just a sample of something that we might do in the classroom. We would do it in our training first. The teachers would make these. They would cut out the dinosaur, but we did it for you in the interest of time. It's laminated, so it actually serves as your whiteboard, okay? So what's great is I can decide, oh, I'm going to do any, I'm going to write numbers here instead, and I want them to match the number of dot to the number. So I can just erase it with my finger very easily, right, and write the number. And it's quite inexpensive, right? So you're going to each get one of these pens, too, and a set of clothespins. So you would match the dot to the number, or the dot to the dot, or I always say put the number on the back, because maybe you want to match the number to the dot. So you're actually doing subitizing and recognition of numeral and recognition of quantity. You can do a whole lot of things with this game. So we're going to pass this out, and on your handout, you have a green handout. What I'd like you to do is, while you're making your little game, have a conversation with somebody next to you and see if you can figure out which foundation or foundations this game matches. Okay, so just take a few minutes to do that. Maybe do that while you're waiting to get your materials. You know, what does this game cover? And then if you finish that, talk about, well, what other content areas? How is this integrated? What kind of social-emotional development does playing a game like this take? What kind of language and literacy skills do you use? Right? What kind of English language development skills are necessary? Okay, so just a few minutes, and you'll have this to take back with you.